Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey West. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we're reviewing another Best Picture nominee. This one is Women Talking, based on a book. And the title is accurate. Women Talking for a
it
lot
sure
of
is.
The movie. So, yes, very accurately titled. So, nominated for Best Picture, a few other Academy Awards as well. So we'll talk about that today on the show as we continue our series of reviewing all the Best Picture nominees that we don't have episodes on yet. So we will have episodes in the coming weeks on Tar, All Quiet on the Western Front, Triangle of Sadness, and The Fabelmans. Hoping to get all those to you before the Academy Awards on March 12th.
So we have 1 month from today.
Yes, it's coming up quickly.
Jared, I have so many movies I still have to watch. Wow. So, and a play, but we'll be all right.
Yeah, you'll be okay. So you'll get through it. So,
yeah.
First up for news, we don't have a ton today, but the Makeup and Hairstylist Guild Awards were the other night. This is obviously awarding best makeup and hairstyling in movies and TV. So Pam and Tommy, the big winner on the TV side. And then for movies, they split it up into a couple of different categories. I'll just go through all of them because there's only five categories. So,
sure.
For best special makeup effects, The Whale won, which makes a lot of sense there.
Sure does.
For best period and character makeup and also best period and character hairstyling, Elvis won, which makes a lot of sense there.
Also makes sense.
Best contemporary makeup went to Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Ooh.
And then best contemporary hairstyling went to Black Panther Wakanda Forever.
Definitely.
So, yeah. Yep.
That's really, I'm glad they have those awards though, because I think, you know, a lot of movies would be nothing without those people and their artistry, but we don't hear about it as much and they don't get as much recognition. So.
Well, and I think it's cool that they like separate them into different categories, because like at the Oscars, it's only one category.
One. Yeah.
Whereas this is like, did you do better current day makeup, or were you making a movie that was like set in a certain time period and you tried to, you know, mimic that? So
yeah,
I think that's good. So, also in our other news item, Steven Twitch Boss, we found out this week, did not have a living will when he passed away. So his wife and his family, that lives on, is struggling to get assets and things like that were in his name, and trying to kind of get that back to his wife just because he did not have the will.
Yeah, I feel so bad about this. I have a feeling they'll go in her favor. I mean, they were happily married. There's kids between them. I don't really see why courts would say no, but it is a good reminder to people to have a living will. Cause I know Jared and I talked about this on another episode when we were talking about Prince, and we talked about like people that had died without a will and how that can negatively impact the people around them or take years in the courts to get it all straightened out. So just a good reminder to do that. And I've heard a good rule of thumb, if people plan on having kids, that's a good time to do it. Not like I know everything, but I've just heard that's a good time, because then if you die, you can at least leave whatever you have left to them.
Yeah, that makes sense. So always good to be thinking about that for sure. So,
yeah.
No corrections this week. We do have some recommendations. I don't think I have anything this week. I have not.
I know. I really
struggled. Yeah.
I have not been reading. I started a new book and I really like it. So I think I'm going to enjoy it the whole way through, but I'll recommend it when it's done. But I have had to slow down just because of life right now for reading. But I did watch Netflix release the next few episodes of You. The first five is my understanding. And then I think there's going to be five more or something in May or June. I can't remember. But it's season four. I have only one episode left. That I did make time for that. I've basically just stayed up late into the night this weekend so far and watched them. But it's really good. And I like this season because it's set in London. And I love London. And it's just fun to see him be creepy in another city. And I'm into this season, so I can't speak for everyone. And then the other thing that came out over the weekend that I wasn't even expecting is Love is Blind After the Altar. They released three episodes. They're only a half an hour, so it's not like a huge time commitment. I already watched them. But wow, there's some turn of events that I've seen with some of these couples, because it's been a year since everything happened. Some of the people that were stupid are still stupid. And just for the record, I still can't stand Colleen and Matt, and I do not think they're going to make it. And I don't want to pass judgment. I know they're married and I care very much about the sanctity of marriage, but those two just make me feel very uncomfortable, and they seem like they fight so much. It seems very unstable to me.
Yeah, Same here. So I saw that those were out, and I haven't watched them yet, but I plan to, because
also, if you find out, Jared, I don't know if they're going to do more, but I think they have to, because they didn't explain. They haven't explained everything. Like, it kind of left on a cliffhanger.
So I
feel like maybe they're going to do that thing that they did where they released a couple every week for like 3 weeks or something.
That might be the case, because Netflix seems to be doing that more, where they're like splitting up episodes of things. So
that's what I've heard they're doing. They're getting a little bit away from the binge model, because people are paying for subscribing, watching something, and leaving.
That would make sense. So
I get it.
Okay, cool. Well, we will move into our review now of Women Talking, released on January 20th of 2023. This movie had a big run through film festivals and things like that before it became a theater release. And I would say, of the Best Picture nominees, this is the one that was really not available before the Best Picture nominations came out. Everything else came out a little bit earlier. So this got nominated for Best Picture. I was kind of surprised, because it just hadn't been in that many theaters.
Now that I've seen it, I definitely get why it's in the running, and this was a big surprise for me. I know I've said that about a couple things, but I think this was a movie I just didn't expect to get a lot from, and ended up getting a lot from the film. So I definitely get why it's in there. I have plenty to say about Frances McDormand, though, in this role. So but more on our likes and dislikes, but I can see why this is nominated, and I'm glad it is. I'm very disappointed in the lack of, I guess, recognition for the film, though, in the Oscars. Like, Sarah Pauly's not nominated for directing. None of the actresses are nominated for acting, and I think that was some very poor judgment on the Academy's part.
Yeah, that was kind of wild. The only two awards it's nominated for are Best Picture and then Best Adapted Screenplay. For Sarah Pauly, since she did the screenplay that was, you know, based on the book. So, and also directed the movie as well. So, it's won a couple other awards at other, you know, Critics Association things, but the Oscars, it did not get that many nominations, which was kind of surprising. So,
I'm so sorry.
At the Alliance of Women Film Journalists, it won Best Director, Best Screenplay, Best Ensemble Cast, and Best Woman Screenwriter.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, that is kind of cool, which makes sense. I mean, the Alliance of Women Film Journalists would probably more so reward a film about women. So
yes, makes sense. I was going to say, if you're interested in this topic, I didn't do a fact versus fiction for this, because I actually got a little bit confused about some of the stuff I read. But I did read a really good article, I thought. I have it saved here on my phone. It's Time. It's at time.com. It's called The Harrowing Story Behind Sarah Pauly's Buzzy Drama, Women Talking. And it talks about what this was actually based on. But it sounds like, so there's a book, and then there was something that really happened. But what I got confused on in this article, and this is probably just because I maybe was kind of distracted while reading it, but I'm a little confused on where it took place. The actual event, which I think was Canada. But then this movie is supposed to take place in Bolivia.
Yes.
Which I would have also never guessed. I thought this was America when I was watching it. I was like, where is this? Out west? Too.
So
I thought it was out west, or like Pennsylvania. But I was wrong on both counts. But it is an interesting article. And if you're, and I know that the book is by Miriam Toews, T-O-E-W-S, and she wrote it in 2018. And there were reasons that Sarah Pauly changed some of the details. But for the most part, this event happened. That's what I wanted to share. But if you want to read the real story, there it is.
Yeah, it says on Wikipedia that she describes her novel as, quote, an imagined response to real events that took place on the Manitoba colony, a remote and isolated Mennonite community in Bolivia between 2005 and 2009. So I think it's a real thing that happened, but I don't know if these women actually talked about this in this way for the book. So
yeah,
there's a little bit of confusion there. So, and I don't know if this book is technically classified as fiction or nonfiction. I think it's fiction. So yeah. Okay. So yeah, but it's based on that book, though. And then the movie obviously came out. Sarah Pauly redid the screenplay for it, and adapted it. And that's what you see in the film. So it's rated PG-13 for sexual assault, mature thematic content, bloody images, and some strong language. It's an hour and 44 minutes. And on IMDb, it's a 7.5 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, critics 90%. Audience is 79%. And then box office wise, it's made $3.7 million domestically. And that's its worldwide total as well. And the synopsis, do nothing, stay and fight, or leave. In 2010, the women of an isolated religious community grapple with reconciling a brutal reality with their faith. And that's really their only three choices. And throughout the movie, they discuss the pros and cons of kind of all three of those. Yes. So this movie is directed by Sarah Pauley. She is an actress, director, and activist from Canada. She also directed 8 episodes of Hey Lady, and then also directed Stories We Tell, Take This Waltz, and Away From Her. And in 2008, she was nominated for a Best Adapted Screenplay Oscar for Away From Her. And this year, she's nominated for Women Talking in that same category. And she has no upcoming projects listed yet.
Yes. Very talented woman, though. Seems like she can.
Yeah, for sure.
And she's acted in quite a bit. I didn't include that. I just included that she is an actress, but she has quite a list of acting credits as well.
Yes, she does. So we will take a quick break here, and we'll come back. We'll talk about the cast, our likes and dislikes for Women Talking. And we're back here on the Silver Screen podcast talking about Women Talking. This is an ensemble cast for sure. Everybody pretty much has equal screen time. But the first person we're going to mention is Rooney Mara.
Thank you, Jared. And I have, I didn't put a crush alert, but I have semi-crushes on several of these women. Rooney Mara plays Ona. She is originally from New York. Rooney, I did think this was fun. I didn't realize this. Her real name's Patricia. But it's okay. Rooney, it's Patricia Rooney Mara is her name. Anyway, she's best known for Carol, The Social Network, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Nightmare Alley, and Side Effects. She has been nominated for 2 acting Oscars for Carol and The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Next up, she will be in The Island and Brideshead Revisited, which is a book I've been meaning to read for a very long time, so I need to get to it. Also, fun fact, I think we know this, but she is probably married. We're not sure. It's not been confirmed, but married to Joaquin Phoenix, and they have a son named River together after Joaquin's late brother. But I always think they're such an interesting couple, but they make perfect sense to me. I'm not confused by the two of them getting together.
No, their personality types seem very
for
similar.
Sure. So, and they're both wildly talented. I don't know that I would like want to hang out with them and have dinner, but I think Rooney is such a great actress. I really enjoy her. And I think she's quite beautiful. Anyway, great job, Rooney. And I do love that they named their son River. I thought that was very sweet. Next up, we have Claire Foy. She's probably my favorite of the bunch. She plays Salam in this film. She is an English actress best known for The Crown, First Man, Unsane, and The Girl in the Spider's Web. She's won 2 primetime Emmys for her role as Queen Elizabeth II in Netflix's The Crown. And then next up, she will be in Strangers.
Very nice.
She was great as Queen Elizabeth. Like,
I have not watched
the
Crown, but I've heard that sentiment from lots of people.
She was so good. And then lastly, we have Jessie Buckley. She plays Marie Kay in this film. It's because I'm looking at words ahead of time. She is an Irish actress who is best known for the miniseries Chernobyl and Fargo. She was also in movies Beast, I'm Thinking of Ending Things, and The Lost Daughter. In 2022, she was nominated for a Best Supporting Actress Oscar for The Lost Daughter. And then next up, she will be in Wicked Little Letters, Hot Milk, and Fingernails. Also, Jared, when I was doing the notes for this, I had to go back twice to look at 2022 being nominated for The Lost Daughter because I keep thinking it is 2022. And I was like, well, how did that happen? I'm just confused, you know? But it's 2023, and I have to remember that.
I had to, since you mentioned her movie titles,
yes.
I had to go look up what Hot Milk and Fingernails
tell
were about.
Tell me everything, because so, I didn't. I just laughed and moved on. But tell me, please.
So Fingernails is a drama sci-fi movie, and it stars her and Jeremy Allen White. And,
love him!
She increasingly suspects that her relationship with her longtime partner may not actually be the real thing. In an attempt to improve things, she secretly embarks on a new assignment working in a mysterious institute designed to incite and test the presence of romantic love in increasingly desperate couples.
Okay. So, well, sure.
Riz Ahmed also in this movie. Luke Wilson.
What?
So, I don't know when this is. No word on when this is coming out.
I am crazy about all three of those men. Wow. Yeah, I'm definitely a Luke Wilson fan. Hardcore Luke over Owen for me.
And then in the other movie, Hot Milk, this one is with a strange illness, a mother and her daughter embark on a journey to the Spanish coast to find a cure. And along the way, the daughter discovers another reality far from her controlling mother. This one has Jesse Buckley and Fiona Shaw in it. So,
wow. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. So there you go. Jesse Buckley and some interesting projects. I'll look up Wicked Little Letters while you're doing the other ones.
Yes. Feel free.
So we
please.
Hit all three. So
please, we need to know. People, inquiring minds want to know. I did want to say this movie has, well, I always say this, so I'm going to try to switch it up. Let's see. This movie has a great cast, and it supporting actors include Frances McDormand, Judith Ivey, Emily Mitchell, Kate Hallett, Liv McNeil, Michelle McLeod, August Winter, and Ben Whishaw.
So, Wicked Little Letters is a mystery movie, and when people in Littlehampton start receiving scandalous and obscene letters, suspicion immediately falls on Fiery Rose, who might lose the custody of her daughter. A group of women set out to solve the mystery. Jesse Buckley plays Rose, and Olivia Colman also in that movie. So, that's
well, we love Olivia Colman. So. Olivia Colman, she's one of the greats, you know?
She really is. So
she's just going to get better and better, too.
Yeah, she's crushing it. So.
She's one of those people, too, that seems just insanely likable. Like, if you met her, I feel like she'd befriend anyone. Can I also, let's just sidebar. We're doing so well on our just time today. One of my favorite, I think, living actors right now is Jamie Lee Curtis. I have been watching so many little snippets of interviews with her. She, the other day, I'm not going to get the quote exactly right, and I'll kind of bleep myself because this is kid friendly. But she was talking about how fortunate she feels to be nominated for an Oscar for the first time in her life at her age, because she's in her 60s.
Yeah.
And she said, I've made my living doing horror films and selling yogurt that makes you poop. She used the other word, poop. I laughed so, and I was by myself just watching this video. I laughed so hard, but she's right. I mean, that really is like Halloween is what she's known for. And then the probiotic yogurt that she sells, which she's great in those commercials. And that's what that yogurt's for. I mean, it helps keep you regulated, but I just thought that was so funny. But there are some people that I'm just like, yeah. I've seen you 800 times at the Oscars, or we know you're horrible, like Army Hammer. There's certain people that we're just like not happy for. Jamie Lee Curtis is one of those people that I'm like, I want you to have every good thing because you seem so down to earth, so wonderful. She doesn't get surgery. She's such a like, she's just an every seems woman kind of person.
Very chill. So
very chill, like, and very
go with
humble.
The flow. Yeah.
Humble and appreciative. And that's what people who are famous like that, that's what I want them to be like. And not many of them are. So I don't know that she's going to win, but dang, I love and appreciate Jamie Lee Curtis.
Well, and when she was in Halloween too, I don't think that movie was made for such a low budget. I don't think they expected that to be such a huge hit like it was. So that launched her career, obviously. So I think she always thinks back on that too and was like, you know, if that went a different direction, I may not be in the place I'm in right now. So
every time we talk about Halloween too, I think of my friend Carrie, who I love. Carrie's an old coworker, but she was so disappointed in my disdain for that movie. You know, the more I've thought about it, I didn't hate that movie. I found it to be slightly ridiculous, but I can definitely appreciate why people like it, and I would watch it again. So again, sorry, Carrie, but every time I think of Halloween, I crack up because I remember her talking to me about how I broke her heart when I didn't like it.
Yeah, I understand that other horror movies, like you can see that they took influence from Halloween for sure. Yeah. So
yes.
I appreciate that. So
definitely.
Back to Woman Talking, which is not Halloween by any means.
Nor is it funny. It's
nor is
not
it funny.
Funny.
No, not at all. No. First, like, obviously, this movie has a great cast. Everybody is great in their performances. Anytime you get this many powerhouse women together, Rooney Mara, Claire Ford, Jesse Buckley, Frances McDormand for 3 minutes, which we'll talk about a little bit later on, you know, you're going to have good performances here. And the movie is so based around the acting because there's not a lot of other stuff going on. Most of it takes place in this barn and there's not like a ton of special effects or anything. So the acting really has to be solid. And in this movie, it definitely is.
Agreed. Do you know one of my favorite things I love about my friendship with Jared is sometimes I don't even have to put like a note, or I'll just say like, can we talk about Frances? And he knows exactly what he already knows what's irritating to me about. this. Anyway, love that. We'll touch on it. But for me, this was a twofold thing I really liked. I thought the acting was so good. This was kind of like The Whale, where there just wasn't a false note. Everybody was good. A lot of movies really that are nominated this year, even Banshees of Inisherin, so much of the acting is so top-notch. It's really hard to say one person was better than the other, and I felt that way about this movie. But what I also liked, there were a lot of unfamiliar faces, at least to me, or women that I'd seen in maybe one other thing that I couldn't even recall what it was, and they were all so good. And I also thought the people, the younger children and the young adults in this film also did a great job. I was just impressed across the board over the acting and the cast that they assembled of both really familiar faces and some unfamiliar.
Another like for me was I liked the storylines for all these women. I liked how they were all kind of a little bit different, and I liked the generation thing as well. So you have some women that have their mothers that are also living in the colony that are alive, and then they have, you know, obviously their daughters. So that plays into it. And you have Rooney Mara's character who is not with anybody, but is about to expect a baby. So I just thought it was very interesting how they made them all a little bit different. And I liked the generations thing as well, because the older women have different opinions maybe than the mothers do, than the children do. So I thought that was very well done.
That's a great point. Also, I forgot, we probably should do definite trigger warning for sexual assault in this film. So if you are unprepared for that or don't want to hear that in this, we're going to talk about it. And it's hard, again, as in most films, not to talk about spoilers. So if you're wanting to wait to watch the movie first, now's the time to get out. But that's a great point, Jared, because the dynamics between the different generations, I also found very interesting, especially with the oldest generation, like the ones that had daughters and granddaughters at this place or grandchildren, because I was thinking, I wonder how they're feeling knowing that they were raped and knowing that children came of those rapes. And then also now seeing it happen to their children and knowing it's also going to happen to their granddaughters. The guilt you would feel, maybe denial that they felt, and they all reacted to things differently. But you're right, showing those different generations made it infinitely more powerful and gave a lot of like depth to this film.
You already mentioned kind of the few familiar faces to the thing. There's a lot of women in this movie that maybe we haven't seen in a lot of other projects before. So, but like you said, they all did a great job in their performances. So, also the music was great as well. There's a couple different things for the score. At one point it's like this acoustic guitar type deal going on. And then at the end it gets to be really powerful when, spoiler alert, they decide that they're gonna, you know, leave, and they actually go about leaving the community. But yeah, the score, I noticed that as well. The score, I thought, really complimented it very well. So
yeah, and it was so simple. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of music to the film, but I felt like where they added music was appropriate, and the music was so beautiful with it. Yeah.
Another like for me is that I liked that they kept the appearances of the women very simple. Like, none of them had a lot of makeup on, which is probably how they would be if they were actually in a Mennonite community. But I thought that really allowed the performances to stand out as well, because you're just seeing kind of the raw faces of these women as they act this out. So I really like that choice to not like put a lot of makeup on them. So
also, I did want to check. Would you be able to check? I wondered if they were Mennonite and wasn't positive 100% that that's what was going on, but I think you might be right. And the one fashion faux pas that obviously I completely understand it in this context, but it was hard to see those tube socks with the Velcro sandals, especially when these women, some of them are just so beautiful that it's kind of like Harry Styles and Don't Worry, Darling, when they tried to make him look ugly and you're just like, this is impossible. Why are you even trying? I did feel like that in this movie. Like, Rooney Mara doesn't have a stitch of makeup on and she just looked beautiful. And so interesting. But I also thought that was a good point, Jared, that they played it, I thought, exactly how it would be, where people wouldn't be wearing makeup. It's not like they're going to be doing overly fancy things with their clothing, their hair, or anything to make them be more enticing to men.
Yes, they were Mennonite.
Thank you. Okay.
And that's a little different than Amish, because I noticed things in this movie, like they had refrigerators in their houses. Yep. And that's something that like Amish people would not have. So Mennonite are still have, I think, as far as I know, have a lot of the same beliefs as Amish, but they have some more modern conveniences in terms of they do use power for certain things and things like that. So,
yeah.
And like, obviously they're using like cow fertilizer in this movie, which has been like, or like knocking out gas, which is obviously like they purchased that from somewhere. So there's certain things that they do a little differently than Amish. So another like that I had for this movie is I really liked the romance or friendship, if you will, between Ona and August. I thought that it was very realistically portrayed. They didn't sugarcoat it at all. You could obviously tell that like August wanted to be with her, but due to the circumstances that were happening, it wasn't going to be able to happen. But they were very good friends. I just really liked his character as well, but I really liked that romance, if you will, is kind of a side story between them as like a B story in this movie.
I totally agree with you. I really liked his character. And one thing that I liked that just adding to what you're saying, I liked that men were almost non-existent in this film, except for little boys, like the young kids of the women. And then August, Ben Whishaw's character. We do see someone's husband one time briefly, and we do get depictions of people being assaulted without really seeing everything that's going on. But I do think that I'm sure that was a choice to do that. But I really like this movie is about women. So they focused only on the women. And it was nice that the man we get to know a little bit is the one that's good. He represents, he is a noble person. He does the right thing. He's educated. He's kind. And he was very aware of not speaking out of turn or speaking over them or telling them what to do, which made him infinitely more attractive in my opinion. So I really liked that.
Another like I had too is I like that they bring up kind of all the moral dilemmas of the three situations.
Yes.
Like, I really thought that was very interesting to listen to because they go back and forth a lot and the women have different opinions on different perspectives of things. So, you know, they talk about if they stay, what'll happen? Well, the men will keep doing this to them. If they, you know, leave, they'll be excommunicated, which, you know, they'll be looked down upon. But then they say, you know, what if the women leave? And are we going to take the children? And how old will the children be if we take them? That was another part that I really liked is the scene where they're like, they're asking August, like, do you think young men that are 13 and 14 will have an effect on our community? And he is like, yes, they definitely will, but I still think they're young enough that you could probably train them in the right ways and, you know, have them not turn out like your husbands and maybe fathers did. So I thought that was a really good scene too, but I loved how they grappled with that decision for a really long time in terms of what they were going to do. And then they kind of narrow it down to two decisions, like they were going to either stay and fight or they were going to leave. And then they finally decide that they're going to leave. But I really liked how that process played out in the movie.
Same. And the young men, I like that the women even wondered, you know, well, if they are of at least sexual age or thinking of those kinds of things, can they be, I don't want to say altered or fixed. I mean, like mentally
basically,
and
can
morally,
their morality
can we teach
change?
Them?
Yeah.
Can we teach them how to treat women and all of that and how to deal with sexual situations and things? I completely agree with you, Jared. And I think one thing I really loved about the women talking is just the consideration they showed for so many things. It wasn't just let's get guns, let's murder people. It was like, well, let's see the pros and cons about everything. They were willing to kill people, but they were also like, well, what's the moral issue with killing people? And they always brought in religion, which was interesting. And again, I almost like these stories. I like them almost as much as the journalist stories that we love, you and I both like, because I really like when there's dilemmas between religious order and organized religion versus, you know, the other secular world. And I like too when people are trying to consider both, like, well, could this be, because that's the way I like to see it too. Well, could you follow this guidance and this rule and this law of God or whatever? But also we're in the 21st century in this, you know. I just thought that was so interesting. So really well said by you.
Another like for you that was not a like for me is
I wondered when I typed this if you would feel the same.
The filter they put on this is like a sepia tone type thing.
Yeah.
And I thought it was hard. So like normally if you do that, you might use it for like flashbacks or something, but they use it throughout the whole movie. And that was one of my few dislikes is that I thought with that being on there the whole time, it was hard to tell, like, are we in present day? Are we flashing back to something that happened earlier? Especially when they are in like the children are in the field with that one character. I forget her name that has decided she's not going to talk anymore. And decided she actually identifies as a man.
So, I forget too. I do forget. My bad.
Yeah, but I thought that was the only time that I was like, is this present day or is this a flashback? What, you know, this is kind of odd. So, but yes. It seems like you did like the filter.
I did, but is that your last, is this the last like? Because this actually leads into a dislike of mine.
Yeah, I think so that's my last like. Instead of, you know, we've already talked about it a little bit, but just and you put it in the notes too, the topic of the film is really interesting. I feel like you don't see a lot of movies made about this particular thing. So that was very interesting to me. But yeah, that was my final like before dislikes. So
the person that played who you're talking about is named August Winter, which is fun. And August Winter plays Melvin.
Yes.
That's who. Yep. So my like was that I liked it leads into a dislike. I liked the filter they used because things like seeing blood, I couldn't tell sometimes, honestly, if they had had a miscarriage or if they were bleeding from a rape or if they had given birth and were just left there to deal with whatever their body, the trauma they've gone through. But I found that really interesting that sometimes you're like, I don't even know what just happened here. But the blood, I forget what film. We talked about another film where this happened where I liked that you couldn't quite tell because of the colors, how graphic it was. Man, why can't I think of what it
Emancipation
was?
Emancipation, maybe?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You're absolutely right. It made it less, it still cuts you to the core because you're so bothered by the content, but you don't really need the graphic. Like, it's already graphic enough in your brain. Like, your brain's developing worse stories than actually seeing all the blood and gore. So I really liked that. But my dislike is exactly what you said. And I forgot to type this earlier, but this is definitely something that bothered me. I had a very hard time understanding the location and time period of this film. And that bothered me because I do think a film I would probably give 100% to is one where I can answer all the questions, who, what, when, where, why, like what's motivating these people? What's the conflict? Where is this? What time period? All of that. And those are two major things I didn't know in this film by the end. And maybe they want it to be kind of left up to your imagination, but I didn't like that. And I do feel that you're right, that the filter thing aided that problem.
Yeah, I think I did finally figure out the time period, but it took me a while. When it first started, I thought, okay, is this like the 1800s, 1900s, you know, where are we? And then we cut to a shot of one of their houses and they have a refrigerator. So I'm like, okay, well, probably at least the you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, maybe. Right. So we're moving up a little bit. And then the part I finally figured it out was when that pickup truck comes down the road and says, come out to be counted in the 2010 census. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And the song that was playing was obviously not from 2010, but we knew it had to be past whatever time period that song.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm with you. That was the only time I had any context for like, oh, I guess I didn't even good job picking up on the fridge and stuff. I saw those things, but I didn't think about it. But yeah.
But then I thought when they did say it was set in 2010, that really gave me like a sense of shock almost that was like, wow, this is not that old. Like this was, you know, occurred 13 years ago or whatever. This is when this movie's set. So that really kind of snaps you into reality a little bit more, saying like, this is definitely still going on today in Mennonite and Amish communities. So,
well, and also since we didn't know the time period for most of it and we didn't know where it was, I was also confused by the laws and stuff. Like these people were going to trial, but I was like, where and with who?
Yeah, that part
like,
was messy. Yeah, who's going to really hold explain them? That.
Yes, I didn't love that. So I would say in general, not knowing the time period and stuff led to a lot of questions that I would have liked answered, which made it a little bit less likable for me as a film.
Two other dislikes. Katie has personal biases out for Jesse Buckley and Frances McDormand. So
they're very different.
Yeah. So you don't like Jesse Buckley in anything?
I think she's a very talented actress. I think in the few things I've seen her in, she's playing the same person. She's always going to be, I don't want to use the B word. I don't like to call women that. But as a descriptor, that's what she plays. And it'd be cool to see her not do that. And I do know that some of the purpose of her character is unlikable. Like you have to have someone that grinds your gears. and she really plays that well. But I'm kind of like, in the few things I've seen of her, I'm like, okay, so is this all you do, and you do it well?
It's kind of like the Ryan Reynolds problem, where like, yes, once he did Deadpool, yes, he just plays that in every movie now.
Yeah, and I can't
version of Deadpool.
I do think she's talented, but she just, something about her really does grind my gears. But maybe she'll be in something else and it'll change. I don't know anything about her personally. I'm not out to get her. I'm just like, ugh. And then Frances, I really like Frances. I think she is an odd duck. I think she is truly strange. Like all the time, like in movies and out of movies, strange, but so talented. But I am, Jared, you and I think we felt the same way. I'm so furious that they even were like, Frances is in this movie. She was in it for maybe 3 minutes. She, spoiler alert, doesn't leave with everybody. She's the only person that we really get to know. Well, we don't even get to know her, but she's the only person we're familiar with who leaves, who doesn't go.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they, she did, I know she helps produce the film, but I do wonder if they only did that for name recognition and Oscar nominations. Like, I don't even know what the purpose was of her being in it, or at least, well, why they put her in the marketing.
Yeah, why was she on the poster and
no
in the
idea
trailer so prominently?
That, no idea.
That is definitely a bait and switch. Also, shout out our boy Brad Pitt, also throwing some money
at
this
know,
as well.
I know, Brad! So. Every time, Brad! That's every time I see Plan B, I go, oh, yep, well, A, this is
gonna
probably
going
to be good. Except for Blonde. Let us never forget.
And it's probably never based on a true story, except for Blonde. So,
and it's
just,
for the most part, going to be done extremely well and probably going to get nominated for something.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens with Brad.
Another dislike is, it would have been nice when the credits rolled to have some context about maybe where this was set, what the women maybe did after they left the community.
Yes.
How much of this is still happening today, you know, a little less
yes
than 15 years later. Just a few things there that would have definitely just given a more of a closure for the ending, and allowed you, if you were interested, to maybe find out more info about the story and about the situation. It didn't even say, like, anywhere in the credits either, like, read the book this is based on,
right,
or anything.
Or
so,
based
yeah
on a book. Like,
book,
it didn't...
Yeah. Yep.
And, I didn't like that. And I was even more surprised they didn't do that when at the beginning they even put, this is based on this is an imaginary, blah, blah, blah. Like, this is what we would have liked to happen or what we think happened. I don't know why they did that. And then at the end, there was no, like, this is what really happened, or this is, you know, I don't even mind that they didn't say what happened after, but I'm very bothered that they didn't include anything about what this is based on and what the outcome was.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a dislike for me too.
Yeah.
And then a few more things. Salome decides at the end of the movie that she wants her son to go with her, but her
yeah
son does not want to leave with the rest of the community. So she decides that she's going to just gas her son with some of this gas that they use on cows. And unfortunately, they also use on the women in the colony when they
yeah
want to rape them.
Yes.
So because it basically just makes you unconscious. So that was just kind of a wild scene, though. They just kind of threw it in, and then she
yeah
like shoots the gas thing, and then we're on to the next thing. So
I get why she did it. This isn't a hard dislike. And honestly, after the trauma, all the stuff you see about sexual assault, it wasn't like that bad in comparison. But I was shocked they did it, and it seemed kind of random. Like, I do think if they didn't include it, I would have been left wondering what happened to Salome's son. Did he go with them? But I thought it was crazy that, like, the only way to get him to go was to gas him and make him pass out so they could, like, drug him and take him away. And I was kind of like, is that any better than, like, the men doing that to the women to rape them? I mean, obviously, it's not the same. I'm comparing two things that shouldn't be compared. But I was really shocked by that. But in the end, ultimately, I get that drastic times call for drastic measures. But it seemed kind of out of place for me.
Yeah. Final dislike is that, unfortunately, August is left behind. It makes sense. He's a man. He
yeah
kind of is going to stay with the colony, but also they kind of trust him to educate the boys and the,
yeah,
the youth that are going to still be there to maybe possibly do the right thing or be, and obviously with no women there, they're not going to be able to like, sexually assault any women. So
right
if they all leave, which is a good thing. So, but they
sure
kind of trust him to kind of maybe inform the children a little bit more and teach them a little bit better. And also he was, it's interesting because his character leaves and then comes back. So like he's been out in the real world and he knows right. some things that happened in the real world, and he's able to help the women in the movie with that experience as well. But I was sad that he was left behind. I was also sad, like at the very end, there's a scene between him and Claire Foy's character, and yes. he's like, he takes the notes the whole time in the meeting, and he's like, give these to Ona, and she's like, Ona won't be able to read them, and he's like, but her child will be able to read them.
Yes.
And I was just like, that was very sweet. And I wanted him to give the notes to her, but he didn't. He gives her a gun, which is, you know, probably more useful than the paper written notes. But I just thought I would have liked that scene. I was like, just give her the notes too. Like, just take the notes, Claire Foy. Like, that will just wrap up this story kind of nicely.
Yeah,
so.
That's what I thought. And I love that he said, like, but her child could read them. Like, it will, things will get better. I hated that they left him behind. I get why they did it. But I was sad. Oh, also another thing we find out in that scene with Claire, which I could see this coming from a mile away, but he was planning to kill himself when they left he was sad, which is why he had the gun. So that was also, I was kind of like, man, I'm so tired of suicide. Like just hearing about it, it being in movies, I know it's a part of life. It just makes me so sad. But I'm glad he gave the gun away, but I was very worried actually about what would happen to him when the men came back. I wouldn't have put it past them to kill him. I mean, mm-hmm. if they're already committing marital rape and all sorts of sexual assault, I don't think they'd be like, you know what? We draw the line at murder. So I don't know. I was very worried about the fate of August. And I'm also just really sad that he couldn't go with the women and protect them or educate their kids somewhere else.
Are we ready for our final scores?
Yes, I'm ready. Okay. I'm ready.
I'm going to rate this one pretty highly.
Cool.
I'm going to give this, I think, a 95 out of 100.
Whoa!
If we had seen this before I had done my top 10, this would probably have been fourth or fifth in my top 10, I think.
Yes.
I thought that it was very interesting to watch. I could have watched them talk for maybe another hour even. I mean, this movie's only an hour and 45 minutes, which is a nice thing about it. But I loved the conversations they were having. It got to me emotionally a lot of different ways. I was like captivated the whole time watching this. And I really enjoyed it, and I thought it was really well done and a pretty simple movie in terms of sets, locations, things like that. But the script and the performances really carried it, and I really enjoyed it. So
did I. Wow. Well, I'm a little bit lower, but not by much. I've only seen in this year, like movies we're counting, two movies, which is a terrible start. But I'll catch up. Don't worry, everyone. But I was thinking about A Man Called Otto, which I rated so highly, but I think that's because entertainment-wise and watchability-wise, I'm much more likely to recommend that movie and watch that movie. And I didn't rate this one quite as high on Letterboxd, at least not right now, but I'm going to give this an 88, which is higher than what I gave Otto, because I do think the acting is superb. The storyline's so engaging. In the end, it could definitely make my top 10 of this year, but we're at the so early on, who knows? But I agree with you on pretty much everything. The only things, you know, I didn't like really the questions I had at the end, and some of the stuff just makes me sad in the end, but I can't really fault it for those things. But I thought this movie was excellent. I am glad we watched it this year. I can see why it's nominated, and I think it deserves to be there. So 88 for me.
Nice. One final thing I forgot to bring up is I liked how they did not show the violence either. We didn't need to see these women getting raped or getting sexually assaulted to know that it was happening. And I thought that was a good choice by Sarah Polley and the directing team to kind of leave that out. Just like with Till earlier this year, we didn't see any violence in that movie as well. So I thought, you know, the viewer can understand what's going on here without needing to put that on screen. And having
us,
you know, witness it and having actors and actresses go through it. So
totally agree.
Really, really like that choice. So, you can follow the Silver Screen Podcast on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram. Find us on Facebook. Just search the Silver Screen Podcast. Follow our Letterboxd profiles. They're in the show description here. You can follow myself and Katie both on Letterboxd. And then on our next episode of the show, we are going to be reviewing Tar. Cate Blanchett plays a award-winning composer, and that's pretty much the movie. So how does she go about that? How does she deal with that and the pressures and how living up to expectations and all this stuff. So it's a Cate Blanchett masterclass once again.
Of course.
So, but I mean, I've already seen it. I'm not as highly on it as I am this movie. I'll be interested to hear your thoughts on what you think about. It's also 3 hours long.
No, it's not.
It is, yeah.
Why is this happening? I don't have time for this.
And
we're taking a quick break because of me. I am in a play and it's show week, so we are actually going to have a week off. So sorry, there will be a slight delay, everyone. It's totally my fault, but we're going to come back with 2 episodes for you. So get excited. Yes. But Tar will be our first.
Tar and All Quiet on the Western Front coming up. So
yes, but we'll get them all done before the Oscars for you.
We sure will. So that'll be our next episode reviewing Tar.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.